everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with my buddy John. Today we welcome you in on a transition day. We're going from winter to spring with the equinox coming at about 8 o'clock tonight. And someone was telling me, and I don't know if it's factual, but I think it might be, it would be the earliest equinox since 1896, which is kind of interesting. So we'll go into spring officially at about 8 o'clock tonight on this Tuesday, March the 19th. We're in our 14th year with our radio show and our 36th year being involved in Tucson Media. We come to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, which is also the place for about 13 full years of content. We've got a lot of programs conveniently archived for you at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line there is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get the ball rolling with Barbie Reuter, the CEO and founding principal partner with Tucson's operation of Cushman and Wakefield Pie Corps, where Barbie leads the employee-owned commercial real estate firm's activity in southern Arizona and Sonora, Mexico. Barbie is very active in the Tucson community. She is a past chair of the Tucson Metro Chamber, serves as a director for Sun Corridor, Inc., and she's also very active in Southern Arizona Leadership Council with our friend General Ted Maxwell, who will be my guest on the show tomorrow. Barbie, how are you?
Hello, Bill. I'm doing so well, and I'm really glad spring is here. What a beautiful time to be in the desert.
Well, I've been saying on social media that being in town 36 years, I cannot recall a more beautiful winter and early spring that we have had, where it's not too hot, not too cold, and just the right amount of moisture. So it's just been absolutely lovely, and it sounds like you would agree with me on that one.
Oh, it's been stunning. We were, to digress, in Sabino Canyon on Saturday, and I have never seen more cars. We found an overflow parking lot we didn't know existed and had to wait for a parking space. It was insane.
Yeah, I think everybody wanted to get out this weekend. It was, as they say, a Chamber of Commerce weekend. All right, let's get into commercial real estate, Barbie. Let's start with the big picture. How does it look right now? And I know real estate is very much dependent on interest rates. I know that's the case on the residential side, and I assume that commercial as well.
It's the right assumption to make. It does impact really the sales side of the business, and we're involved in both the leasing of commercial space and representing buyers and sellers on the investment or owner occupied side as well. So there is a bit of wait and see on the investment side because returns are impacted by the cost of debt. But you know, any business that needs to expand or contract or relocate, there's still plenty of activity transacting. And you know, the big picture on how the market is doing, you hear a lot in the national news about, well, last year, I mean, 2023, and you and I talked last fall, most of the economists were wrong. They predicted a recession that didn't happen. And I heard an economist at a statewide real estate conference recently call it the near-death experience of 2023 for commercial real estate. We survived it. We're fine.
How are we doing in Tucson? What's the strong sector? Warehouse development? I know it seems like when you go out by the airport, every time I go out that way, Barbie, seems like there is another just huge warehouse going in. What's that look like right now?
You're right. Really, locally and nationally, demand in that industrial and warehouse sector has been incredibly high, and so it's a pretty straight kind of supply and demand story with industrial real estate in Tucson, and we have been anxious to see more developers pull the trigger, if you will, on projects that they have designed and ready to build. They've been a bit hesitant in many cases to do that because of the cost of construction. But we now have, as you know, like at the airport area, that one project on Valencia is now fully leased. The one in the northwest is slower to lease because it represents some larger spaces and the demand for that type of space hasn't been as high. But there are a couple of developers that we're working with, and I'm sure there are others who are now planning to break ground in the next 90 days with new industrial warehouse product that this market really needs.
What are some of the areas? We've heard a lot about apartments and in that area. Are we okay apartment-wise on the inventory, or is there still growth there for maybe new units?
We are really undersupplied. Mm-hmm. Population is growing, and a lot of the new units that have been developed have been at the higher end of the market, and so there's significant demand locally and really everywhere for workforce housing and affordable housing. And so we'd love to see more of that. There's not as much in the pipeline, I think, as the market needs.
What's your take on the redevelopment the future of malls, the brick and mortar stores, and the changes that could be coming to some of the malls?
I think they're exciting. I really do see over time that there's this reinvention, and I think you and I have talked in the past about kind of that predicted retail Armageddon and the death of the malls and the death of retail thanks to e-commerce. But what it did was really disrupted old shopping habits and old patterns and uses for that type of property and brought in a need for more creativity. And it's what we call adaptive reuse, when you take a property and repurpose it for something else. And that might be as simple as what used to be a Blockbuster Video that's now a medical clinic, or it might be the entire redesign and reinvention of Foothills Mall to a multi-purpose, multi-use type of property.
And there could be housing units involved in that as well, in that concept.
Indeed, and there are. And that concept of live, work, play in the same region or on the same site has become a pretty strong trend.
You are the past, actually, global board president of something called CRU. That is an acronym. I don't have it right in front of me, but I'm assuming it's commercial real estate, women in commercial real estate, something like that.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it.
How was that experience for you?
Oh, it was such an honor to represent Tucson on that global board, and we have a very active, thriving chapter here locally with about 100-plus members, and these are women and men who support the mission of transforming the commercial real estate industry by advancing the achievements of women, and they span really every discipline in commercial real estate that it takes to either build a building from ground up or to handle an investment transaction from start to finish. So we have title, mortgage, insurance, brokerage, management, architects, engineers, you name it, and really love to support each other's businesses.
So how are you feeling as we get into 2024 about commercial real estate in Tucson?
I'm a glass half full kind of person generally, but it's certainly not Pollyanna, I think, to say that we're fine. Tucson, relative to some of the metrics that you see in larger cities and some of the challenges that the industry faces with debt restructure, we're insulated from that a little bit. We're not a corporate market. It's much more of a local, a mom-and-pop, a regional type of market in terms of the business environment. And so when the economy shifts dramatically, kind of the bigger they are, the harder they fall, and you see broader swings in markets like Phoenix and on the coast, then Tucson fares pretty well. We dip, but we don't typically stumble.
All right, Barbie Reuter, always a pleasure. Barbie, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Bill.
Barbie Reuter, who in 2019 was a Woman of the Year by Greater Tucson Leadership, so active in our community. She is CEO and founding principal with the Tucson operation for Cushman Wakefield Picor. And we thank Barbie for joining us. All right. Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now for lunch. And of course, they opened for breakfast at 6:30. And they now have a liquor license. So if you'd like a beer with your lunch, no problem. You could do wine, whatever you want, maybe even champagne to celebrate something up at Mona's. Of course, breakfast, maybe a mimosa, champagne, wine with orange juice, whatever. They've got you covered at Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Steve and the team ready now for lunch. You could do breakfast as well. You call it. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. We'll be back with Shelley Fishman with an enthusiastic two thumbs up. Love those kind of Tuesdays with Shell. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And here he is, Mr. Shelly Fishman, looking pretty good on the markets today.
Yeah, you know, last Tuesday was a good day, and today is a better one. In between, not so good, but, you know, we seem to be about where we were a week ago. So, you know, any week when things kind of hold on, given a lot of the uncertainty that's been going on, especially with Congress, I think we're okay. So we're back above 39,000 on the Dow. We're up, you know, almost 0.4% on the S&P 500. So we're at or near, you know, the records that were being set a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, take a breather. It's fine.
As Barbie Reuter was pointing out, Shelley, and you listened to Barbie, and we thank her for her input in today's show. You know, all that talk last year, there was so much talk about, you know, a lookout, recession's on the way, and it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. And you and I talked, you know, almost every week about the fact that it's not going to happen. She was right. There are a lot of economists that were forecasting it. There were a whole bunch of people who wanted it to happen simply because having a recession would have been bad for the administration.
Yes.
There's also a lot of people stuck in the, you know, in the 1980s thinking about what this economy is and what we have. And you know, Ms. Wright was really on something when she talked about old habits and patterns changing. And that's not just on the consumer side. That's, you know, across the economy. And that's what's been so interesting and a little scary to watch. But things are being repurposed. The whole idea of a integrated worldwide economy has, I think, finally begin to sink in. And the idea that as much as you would like to break away and, you know, become your own island unto yourself as a country, that's very, very difficult to do. And the unintended consequences of doing that are just, you know, very hard to, well, anticipate because they're unintended. And so, you know, a perfect example is what would happen if we were to slap 100% tariff on imported cars from China?
Mm-hmm.
You know, China would retaliate. You know, all of a sudden, we wouldn't have T-shirts. You know, now how are cars related to T-shirts? Well, I don't know.
We wouldn't have a lot of products.
We wouldn't have a lot of products that we rely on right now.
And that's been in the news. This tariff deal. We've all heard it.
Starting trade wars doesn't seem to me to be a very sensible thing to do. The better policy or series of policies is finding ways to accommodate each other and somehow separating the economic policies from, for instance, you know, the geopolitical policies to the extent you can. But we are very much dependent upon both our trading partners and our manufacturing partners to keep our economy stable, to keep the prices down on things where we want to keep prices down, where we can't afford to be manufacturing that stuff ourselves. And even if we want to manufacture it ourselves, it's going to take a good deal of time to bring that or to repatriate a lot of that manufacturing. What's more, there's going to be a high degree of reluctance, I think, on the part of employees to go to work for stuff where they got burned once before, you know, the whole Rust Belt, if you will. I'm not sure that people, you know, want to go back to steel factories or T-shirt factories, for that matter. So I think moving ahead is a better direction if less knowable, you know, than trying to move backward. And I think that, you know, coming back to the way you know, opened the discussion, that's why people who were saying all of this that's happened in the past has indicated a recession's coming, and yet there was no recession. You know, unemployment didn't go up. Even when interest rates were being raised by the Fed to try to control inflation, we didn't see a slowing down in the economy. To the contrary, we're going to have had a 2023 that's come in, you know, well ahead of the average for the whole 20th century, or 21st century, if you will. And we're going to see a GDP growth this year that's probably in the, you know, close to 3% range. That is not recessionary. So what young people entering the whole economic community of thinkers have to start thinking about is new models, new algorithms, new ways of thinking about this economy. And I think that's starting, and it's becoming, I think, more embedded in the way we're seeing the economic community forecast what's going to happen.
So the Fed meets next week.
Yes.
Nothing as far as reductions planned.
You know, unless the world falls apart between now and then, I would like to see them, you know, cut interest rates. But the general consensus in the economic community is that they're not going to do it. They'll wait until June or July to start cutting interest rates. You know, that's not a big deal unless you're dependent on stuff that is interest rate sensitive, as, you know,
homes,
Barbie Ryder, home,
Barbie Ryder,
estate,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Building new plant factories, etc., where you have to borrow money to do that. And I'm sorry, there is in a 20-year period, which is the normal payback period that you look for when you're evaluating a large construction program. The difference between a 4% loan or a 6% loan is non-trivial.
Well, as Barbie Reuter pointed out, there are these developments on the commercial side that are just waiting right now.
Absolutely.
They are waiting. So what you're saying, I mean, makes so much sense, at least to me. Why not do a small rate decrease?
And test the waters.
Test the waters
because Jay Powell is scared to death that he won't be compared to the geniuses of the past. You know, that's the only thing I can figure here. It would be so easy and probably non-dangerous.
Yeah, and it would charge
to cut a quarter, it would charge up the... I mean,
it would be, but
he ain't going to do it.
No.
So, you know...
And it looks like we are going to avoid a government shutdown, which is good news.
And that's probably what the market today is reacting to.
Yeah.
Is, you know, some reduction in uncertainty. But the other thing that we are seeing, and it's beginning to show up in results and in corporate results as CEOs, you know, get on their conference calls and talk about what the next couple of quarters is going to bring, is we are seeing some progress in some of the, for instance, the chip plant manufacturers, the battery plant manufacturers, some of the stuff that we have either re-onshored or have begun to reinvest in with government help. This has never been, I'm going to get a little dangerous here. We have never been a strictly capitalist society. We've always been a society and an economy that depends to a very great extent, especially since the Great Depression, that depends on good direction from the government and help from the government, which then gets transferred into the private sector from the public sector, with good regulations and you know, the kind of lawmaking that makes some sense. Our lawmaking ability these days, you know, seems to be, you know, questionable. But the idea that we are taking some directions, as we did post-World War II, in rebuilding the country and moving from a wartime economy to a peacetime economy, well, now we're moving from an economy that has been completely intertwined internationally to one that is, I think, a little bit, less diverse and more into the things that we need to be doing for ourselves. Now, that ain't going to work if we don't train a workforce to support it. And if you've got 5 million jobs open and they can't be filled because we don't have the skills here.
And where are they going to come from then?
Where are they going to have to come from offshore? Okay. You know, we're going to have to start training people here in our colleges. We're doing that, but then we're sending them home. Mm-hmm. That makes very little sense. So
if we're going to be domestic-centric, you're going to have some homegrown people who are getting trained in this country.
Or you're going to have to live with all of the uncertainties that you live with when you're offshoring critical stuff like masks or chips or solar batteries and then, you know, that kind of thing. Solar panels and the batteries that support them. You know, we've got a power grid that's got to be completely reconstructed.
Completely.
There is so much to do.
So much infrastructure.
And we've got to get around to doing that.
All right, Shell, any final quick thought?
Happy spring.
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, the weather's been great and the
fabulous.
Market's good. So.
All right, Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. Thank you, Shelley. We'll see you next Tuesday.
You bet.
Take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things in Zocalo Village, conveniently located, beautiful area of the valley, 3384 East River Road, right there by the Rito River and just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a 13-acre site, and Jan and Jack, the owners, I just doubt if they could even get any more plants on that 13-acre site. There is just a little of everything. And so you go in there, and the salespeople, so knowledgeable, they will point you, not only point you in the right direction, they will walk you to what you need for your garden. And Zocalo Village is part of that complex, and that's where they have beautiful imported items from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. A lot of pottery, a ton of pottery, including wonderful Talavera pottery from Mexico. When we do our telephone interviews, that's sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Trying to bring Zach in once a month now, Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the University of Arizona-based Institute, Arizona Institute for Resilience, and conveniently the acronym is AIR. AIR coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the UA campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. And when you think about it, Zach, climate affects everything, doesn't it? Pretty much.
It does, and that's why it's a fun field to work in, because you do get to interact with a lot of different disciplines and a lot of interesting people and some pretty important topics.
Good to see you, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. Always like doing this.
Always a pleasure. We like having you on. And I've pointed out before, I'm a weather climate hobbyist, just like I would also consider I'm a travel hobbyist, interested in the weather and what it's all about and where all of this weather comes from. Tucson experienced in the meteorological winter, which, according to the Weather Service, spring begins March 1st. Now, the equinox is today, tonight at 8:06. That's the spring, beginning of the spring equinox. But let's talk a little bit about the winter, which I've said on social media, and maybe you'll agree with me, I hope you do, that I've been in town 36 years, and the winter and early spring, to me, has been just about perfect. Not too hot, not too cold, and enough moisture seemingly sprinkled in there. Maybe like we'd have go about 5 or 6 days and get a little bit of rain. It's been very nice.
It has been. You know, what I thought you were going to say is okay, that this winter has been very odd, which...
Yeah, it is. I'll agree with it. It's odd in that it's been so different after the miserable 2023, and I say miserable not only from my personal life, but what Anne was going through during the worst summer. My gosh, last summer was just horrible. And we had, on top of Anne having terminal cancer, we're having like two storms that would be considered like once in a lifetime storm within 10 days, lose trees down. We lost our power for 36, almost 40 hours, had to go to a hotel. It was a horrible, at least on my side of looking at it, weather-wise and personally, 2023. So it's odd now that we finally have some good climate stuff going on.
Yeah, that's
so there you go.
That's a good take. I like that. And I think you can, you know, every single year, every single season, you can make comments like, wow, it's just the weather is just doing really weird things and the climate is just doing really
People say that all the time. Oh, I know. Man, it is so
Which is like the beauty, I think, about this field and, you know, thinking about looking up and thinking about what's going on. But yeah,
think about it in your field, wherever you go in the world.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to say something to you about the weather.
Right.
Wherever you travel.
You know, in this winter has its set of sort of uniqueness to it as they all did. And, you know, as you mentioned, it struck you in the right way this winter. I think, you know, if we sort of step back and look at, you know, broader scale temperature and precipitation, and maybe even like broader scale sort of drivers of the climate, we had a strong El Nino. So El Nino came back after three consecutive winters of a La Nina. And you know, we typically experience wetter conditions in the southern tier of the Southwest, and in other parts of the U.S. there is a certain distinct, I would say, El Nino signature. And you know, largely actually that played out this year. Mm-hmm. The southern part of Arizona has been slightly above average. If we look at Tucson, I believe, looking at that, I'm drawing
15th wettest winter.
15 wettest, right. So yeah. That actually sort of aligns with what we might expect with an El Nino.
Yes.
And I think it's somewhere on the order of like 120% of average. And, you know, the winter is not done yet. It's definitely on its tail end. If we think of like the snowpack conditions, the sort of peak in snow conditions in the Southwest are around March 1st. So we're sort of already doing a lot of the melting and that sort of speak. Maybe further north into the higher country of Colorado and in Nevada and Utah, the peak snowpack conditions are April 1. So I think, you know, in Arizona, we're sort of moving out of the winter. We might get, you know, a storm, mm-hmm. maybe two if we're lucky, mm-hmm. remaining. I think on average, you know, maybe
we could get something in April.
Yep, yeah. A quarter of an inch to a half an inch more we might expect. Mm-hmm. And that'll put, like, Tucson, if we use Tucson as sort of the marker here, that'll put us at, you know, about 120% of average. If we mm-hmm. didn't get anything, we're still above average right now.
Right.
For Tucson. And, you know, I was out driving around the last two weekends and man, it's green out there.
It is.
You know, poppies are out, like the wildflowers are out. Like,
going to be a fantastic wildflower season coming up here in a couple of weeks. So we had 15th wettest winter, and climate wise, also you have to talk about temperatures. We were very warm this winter, 11th warmest, and we only had those freeze days came all at the first 10 days of January.
That's right.
That was the only time I had to cover the garden plants.
Yeah, and there were a couple of days in a row.
That was
that.
Right after New Year's.
Yeah, I think that's the story. I mean, southern, the warmer temperatures are sort of western wide for the most part. And then the wetter conditions, it's by and large been a decent winter actually throughout the West, even in like the higher country of California, which caught up in February. But in Arizona, the wetter conditions have been in the southern part, but it's still been pretty good across the West.
The snowpack in places like Truckee in the High Sierra of California finally caught up. They were looking really, really bleak in January, but then they had the atmospheric river came along, rivers, it seems, storm after storm, and now they're above average.
Yeah, they're
right. Or are they right about average?
So it depends. There are some areas that are above average, but if you look at in aggregate, the Sierras are a little bit below average. Northern Sierras are are like, I think I was looking at the data this morning, like 94% of
around Tahoe in that area.
Yeah, around Tahoe. And then the central and the southern Sierras are actually around 80% of average. And this actually, if you spin back 1 year, I mean, last year was extremely wet in the Sierras and in the higher country in Colorado and Utah, and really was like an important situation for the water supply. We didn't see that this year, which this is another sort of weird twist, which is last year it was a La Nina year and it was fairly wetter across the West than this year, which was an El Nino. I mean, I guess maybe we're parsing things a little too much here. But the fact that we had a really strong El Nino this year and we had comparable, at least in the southern part of Arizona, precipitation as we did last year is when there was an El Nino when there was a La Nina is somewhat of a maybe what you wouldn't expect.
Well, from April through July, now that's a very, very difficult area for the prediction. The prediction centers to make their forecasts, and they do this on all sorts of modeling, but from what I see, they're showing the Tucson region might be a little bit above average temperature-wise.
For which period?
The most difficult period maybe to predict, April through July.
Well, okay, so temperature is usually an easier thing to forecast
than prediction for precipitation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I would bet a lot of money on temperatures in that period
being above normal.
Being above, and that's
I
just,
would agree with you.
And that's just based on, you know, that's just based on trend. That's just based on global warming. You know, and we're going to experience sort of the delayed temperature impact of the strong El Nino. So even though El Nino is waning and we're moving into what looks like another La Nina, the response in the atmosphere from all of that sort of warming that gets ejected from the tropical Pacific Ocean into the atmosphere has a delay to it. So there tends to be a peak of the El Nino effect on global temperature on the order of 4 to 6 months. So we're still experiencing that. And if your listeners have seen the news and you know, on social media and whatnot, and are looking at sort of global temperatures, you know, we're exceeding, you know, we're if not higher than we've ever been, you know, for February and in the first part of March, we're right there with the maximum we are experiencing, and that has an El Nino signature to it, in addition to the sort of longer term trend. So back to your question, I mean, in terms of temperature, I would expect there to be warmer conditions up through, let's say, the start of the monsoon. So let's say July 1st. And then once the monsoon happens, like I have learned
all
not to try
off.
To predict
know,
the monsoon.
I know, trying to predict that is the precipitation in that period. We're just talking about climate, weather, talking about temperatures. From April through July, the precipitation outlook is currently indicating a chance for below normal amounts. And this comes from the Climate Prediction Center, I assume, from the National Weather Service, yes.
Yeah, and okay, so that, here's my opinion on that. Okay, so this is the time of year where it's really dry, right? Like, let's say April, May, June, we don't get a lot of rainfall. Therefore, below average, like, is not all that meaningful, particularly in April and May and June.
May and June are dry months typically.
Right. So a forecast for below in those years are it's not all that meaningful.
When you live in a desert and then it's typically dry months, it's.
Now they could be picking up on, so part of that forecast is getting into the onset of the monsoon, and it could be picking up on a little bit of a delayed start to the monsoon because of the emerging La Nina, but I find these kinds of forecasts to be very uncertain, and I don't put a lot of stock into them, particularly at this moment. Maybe like a month out, I might start paying a little bit more attention, But the monsoon is, again, like I was saying, it's one of the more difficult phenomenons to sort of get right in both temperature and precipitation because they're correlated. It tends, if you get a wet monsoon, it tends to be a little cooler than if you get a dry monsoon. It tends to be obviously.
And just
a
look
bit
at the
warmer.
Last recent couple of years where we had one of the driest ever summer rainy seasons, and we've had in that period one of the wettest.
Yeah. Oh, 2 years ago was fantastic. Last year, not so good.
No.
I think actually even 3 years ago was a great monsoon. Yeah. So we have a ton of variability year to year, season to season variability in the monsoon season, and it makes it difficult, like statistically, to sort of get a handle on like statistical predictions based on that high variability. And then like thinking about it in terms of like the mechanisms, like what's actually going on with the physics in the atmosphere and the thermodynamics and all that stuff is equally difficult because there's so many variables at play.
All right, Zach, keep that thought. We'll be right back. It's the Buckmaster Show Tuesday edition. And technically, we are still in winter. That will change at about 8 o'clock tonight.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We've been talking climate and weather with UA climate scientist Zach Guido. And what a perfect time of year to take kind of a get in the car or jump in the truck, hop on the motorcycle and head over to Silver City. It's a really beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. The drive is not bad at all. I don't know, about 3 hours roughly east of Tucson. You're on the interstate at Lordsburg, then you take a left basically and head up the mountain to Silver City. Elevation's about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, so you're going to get nice warm days this time of year and a rather cool night. So perfect time of year to visit Silver City and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness or just hang out in historic Silver City. Got some great New Mexican restaurants there where the question always is, would you prefer green or red chili on your chicken enchilada? Zach, what would it be for you today?
I'm a red chili guy.
I would go green. So there we go. All right. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. We were talking about it. It has been a really, as far as I'm concerned, one of the nicest winters and early springs. And when you start thinking about the precipitation for summer, it is really a challenge because of so many elements that come into play of geographically of where Tucson is located.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really special place because we have the monsoon, which, every year.
Monsoon in Arabic means wind.
There you go.
Wind direction. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, it's a shift. Like the traditional definition of it is a shift in the direction of the winds.
And normally our wind here is predominantly from southwest.
Correct. In the winter, we're normally under the westerlies.
Westerlies.
Right? And then in some moments of the monsoon, we have this sort of ridge of high pressure that moves north of us here in Tucson, and it actually makes us be under the easterlies. So we're actually into sort of like more of a tropical atmospheric flow. And then you get winds that circulate around that high pressure system that can bring winds up from the southeast and south and even southwest. It really depends on where the position of that mid-level high is. So, yeah, you know, and the monsoon, I mean, it's not far off, right? I guess now is the waning winter and we gaze now toward, you know, the summer, and obviously we're going to be ramping up into our hot season, the sort of, it's beautiful right now, but the misery of like late May and June is on the horizon.
Anytime we can delay upper 80s, 90s, 100 is great. We're going to be, you know, we've had high temperatures that have actually been the last couple of weeks below normal for the high. When the high this time of year is around 76, 77 degrees, we've been having upper 60s. Today, 70 degrees, you can't beat it.
Well, yeah, and the last week or so of unsettled weather and the cooler temperatures has occurred because we've had this sort of low pressure system that has really sort of been like wafting around.
Was that the cutoff low?
I didn't check if it was a cutoff low. So a cutoff low is a low pressure system that is sort of isolated from its sort of high level steering flow winds.
Looking for its home.
Yeah, and it doesn't have any steering flow associated with it. It doesn't sort of like move out toward the east. It sort of just wanders around. That's a cutoff low. And then there's another term, a closed low, which I think is what at least part of this low pressure system.
It's what's been going on, right, with
but
the cooler temperatures.
Been around, yeah. And you know, it's sort of actually moved back west and moved back east. So it's been affecting us for the last 5 or 6 days. And we've got something on the horizon too. So, you know, next week,
Sunday was the most perfect with the puffy white clouds and temperatures around 65, 66 degrees. That was pretty darn good for a mid-March day, for a St. Patrick's Day. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, I love coming in here and talking climate at this time because there's so much optimism and hope, and it feel good stories. Like if I were to come in and
couple
mid-June,
I'll be complaining about the wind. Yeah. And I've talked to you about this and the listeners before that I've noticed, at least up at where we live, the Buckmaster Bungalow, it seems like the monsoon has been just so, with these destructive winds and leading the edge of the monsoon. But anyway, we'll have plenty of time, Zach, to talk about that. We are out of time today. I'll see you in about a month. Thank you, Zach Guido from the UA. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Thanks to John Engineering and producing our program. On behalf of Dr. Guido, I'm Bill. Have a great weekend. Our week.